The principal purpose of our voyage was not simply to gather the flora and fauna. That was my personal preoccupation. Rather, our mission was to explore and chart uncharted waters. To that end, the crew of the Beagle would drop a weighted line to the bottom and record the depth at regular intervals. The measurements were called soundings. They told us where we had been and would serve to guide those who followed.
From the National Humanities Center at Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, listen now to our program called Soundings. Thoughts and ideas about the present and the future with an appreciation for the past. Your host is Wayne Pond.
Dr. Sanford Lakoff is professor of political science at the University of California at San Diego. Professor Lakoff was educated at Brandeis and Harvard Universities. He's the author and editor of several books and numerous articles on science, public policy, government and political science, and ethics. As a scholar in residence at the National Humanities Center, Professor Lakoff is a member of a seminar entitled Energy and the Values of American Democracy, in which several scholars at the center examine the effect of energy shortages on American life in qualitative terms. Dr. Lakoff agreed to discuss his work on the energy crisis, American values, and political beliefs for the center's radio program, Soundings. Joining in the discussion is John Agresto, a member of the staff at the center.
Professor Lakoff, a good number of people really don't believe we have an energy crisis or an energy problem, do we?
Well, I think we have to begin by understanding that energy is a rather different sort of crisis or problem than some of the others we've been familiar with. If you compare it, for example, to a military emergency, then you discover that energy is probably a much more multidimensional problem, and it isn't concentrated at one time period. And that's the reason, it seems to me, why the well-intentioned effort of President Carter to compare the energy crisis to the moral equivalent of war was very difficult. It's difficult to make that kind of comparison. But that doesn't mean we don't have a problem. We do have a very serious problem with many different aspects. It's critical to our way of life. It's critical to our industrial productivity. It has ramifications for our relations to other countries. It's a very big set of issues, big in the sense that it looms large in many areas of life.
Well, let's try and flesh that out a bit. Give us a few examples. How is energy so important for our culture, for our business, for our industry, for our ideas, for our social structure? I'm getting these ideas from you that it's more than just a question of resources.
Yes. Well, obviously, if you look, for example, at our industrial productivity, the United States in particular has become accustomed to relatively cheap supplies of energy. And our industrial growth for a very long time is in some ways a reflection of the fact that we could depend on cheap supplies of energy. But it isn't just a matter of industrial growth. It also has to do with our patterns of residential living. For example, the great expansion into the suburbs in the post-World War II period was made possible by the fact that more and more Americans could afford automobiles, and the automobiles ran on relatively inexpensive gasoline. And so we had the pattern of suburban sprawl. We lost much of our mass transit that we had. It's very difficult now for us to shift back into mass transit. We got accustomed to a very mobile style of life, to a constantly improving style of life, and now we're confronted by higher prices for energy, possible shortages, blackouts, brownouts, and the like, and it affects both our industrial productivity, our ability to compete, and our general way of life.
Professor Lakoff, is it simply a question of cost, of how much we're going to pay for it?
Well, that's a difficult question. I think there are some people who do feel that the price mechanism is the key one. that as the prices for energy go up, we will adjust our patterns of consumption. And in fact, in the last year or two, there have been dramatic changes in the use of energy because of the rise in prices. But we're also worried about the stability of supply. If we depend on imported oil, for example, from the Middle East, the prices go up, but we still can't be sure that there won't be a war, for example, between Iran and Iraq, which results in a cutting off of oil supply. So there's reason to be concerned about the supply, regardless of the price.
Is it a case of greedy countries?
Well, I would say it's a matter of the oil supplying countries taking advantage of a situation. The situation is one of increasing world demand for a product that is in scarce supply. They argue, of course, that they're doing the world a favor, because if they didn't raise the prices, we would be consuming so much that oil supplies would be depleted in short order. And they are, in effect, enforcing discipline upon the users of oil. And sometimes they argue that, as President Giscard d'Estaing put it, this is the revenge of the oil-producing countries against Europe for the 19th century, in other words, for previous imperialism. But frankly, I don't consider those arguments very significant. I think one should simply take this as a classic illustration of the behavior of people who monopolize a product that's much in demand. And we shouldn't really blame them for being greedy or anything else. One might as well argue that when we export food or anything else, we too are taking advantage of people who need our product and setting a price that depends upon the market. Now, it's true that the oil prices are being set by collusion. They're ridiculously related to the actual price of production. But there isn't very much we can do about that, short of embarking on a very dangerous course. The only thing we can do reasonably is to curb our consumption, to improve the efficiency with which we use the oil, and thereby to force a decline in the price and to rid ourselves of overdependence on it.
Professor Lakoff, on one level, it seems not a conflict of values as much of a conflict of real ideology. In fact, nothing seems more highly charged in the American political scene today than the energy debate itself. You have pro-nuclear and anti-nuclear forces fighting it out. You have conservationists versus productionists. And in a sense, the energy debate seems to be a debate not about resources as much as a debate about what's good or how people should live. Any feeling on that?
Yes, I think you're right. I think inevitably there's a continuum between the discussion of particular technologies, particular resources, and values. I don't think we can avoid that. People say that we shouldn't be ideological, we should just be pragmatic. But it turns out that what they mean by being pragmatic is agreeing with their values. I don't see how we can avoid making certain tough decisions. And I think the likelihood is that America will make these decisions in terms of the values that have been traditionally strong in this society. We are not, for example, likely to pursue a socialist approach to energy resources. Other countries would. Other countries will nationalize their oil industries. They will set about rigidly planning their energy future and collectively organizing themselves. I think in the American case, we have tried very hard to keep the market forces important, to avoid putting restrictions on what people can choose to do. We will give them incentives. We will put certain mandatory restraints, for example, on automobile producers to reach certain mileage averages. But insofar as possible, we're going to try to avoid pursuing paths which are not congenial to our values.
Professor Lakoff, I think what you're saying there is that we perceive the crisis in relationship to the values we hold. So we are not going to go ahead and nationalize the oil industries overnight. We have some basic belief in the free enterprise system. But I think we have to go further than that. At least what I've read of your work, you go further than that as well. That the energy crisis has some effect on our values, that it will have a transformative effect on what we believe. Not just what we believe transforms our view of the crisis, but that crisis is an agent in transforming our social structure, our value systems, our ideological structure, our political understanding. Can you fill that in for me?
Well, I would not go so far even as to predict exactly what the effects of the problem will be, because a lot depends on very, very uncertain considerations. We really don't know which, if any, of the dozen or more alternative technologies that are currently under development will mature in time to have a significant impact on the present energy situation. I have seen very credible estimates, for example, by chemists, that if we did a very significant, made a very significant investment in biomass conversion, we could overcome the present shortage of liquid fuels in short order.
Could you explain for a second what biomass production means?
Well, biomass covers a host of agricultural sources for energy. And they range all the way from sugarcane crops that can be used for the production of alcohol to not only corn and other such crops, but to cellulose fibers generally. And there are many different technologies, both in use and in development, for the exploitation of these resources. But I simply want to mention that, according to one very credible person, if 10% of the Amazon rainforest were converted to biomass production, we could solve, we could provide enough energy to account for the needs of both North and South America, for the total energy needs of both these areas. Now, again, there will be many critics who will say that that's not true, that if you actually went about doing it, you'd find all sorts of problems. And there are a great many people involved in different technologies who get to be very enthusiastic about what their technologies can do. The point is that there are a great many uncertainties, and that if we're lucky, it may be that all of these new technologies, new explorations, will alleviate the problem considerably. I don't think anybody feels that for the short run, that is to say for the next 20 or 30 years, we will be so lucky, or we can be so lucky, as to get out from under the energy problem altogether.
Professor Lakoff, one of the claims of the new administration, or one of the hopes of the new administration, is self-sufficiency. Is that realistic? Is that possible?
It is not realistic in the short run. President Nixon's effort to achieve energy independence, for example, is now regarded, I think, by most people as having been unrealistic. And I think that if the new administration were to try the same policy, it would also be unrealistic. It's unrealistic for a couple of obvious reasons. Take the situation in liquid fuels. We currently import some 6 to 8 million barrels a day of oil. Now, there's no way that we can replace that from domestic sources. Right now, an awful lot of oil wells are being drilled, but it takes time for them, even if they're successful, to come online. And we simply don't have substitutes for liquid fuels. We can't quickly convert coal, for example, to liquid fuels. And even though we are moving toward greater, more energy efficient automobiles so that our gasoline usage will decline, it's not happening so fast that we can easily predict that we can safely not depend on importing at least 6 to 8 million barrels of oil a day in the immediate future. So that, to that extent, we can't be independent.
From the National Humanities Center at Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, you're listening to Soundings, putting ideas into circulation. Here again is your host, Wayne Pond.
Professor Sanford Lakoff is a political scientist at the University of California, San Diego, and a scholar in residence at the National Humanities Center. At the center, Dr. Lakoff is a member of a seminar entitled Energy and the Values of American Democracy. an investigation of the effects of energy shortages on American society, politics, and culture in qualitative terms. Joining in the discussion with Professor Lakoff is John Agresto, a member of the staff at the center. Professor Lakoff, one of the frustrations of the energy crisis is the apparent lack of a villain, or a clear villain. People look around and they say, well, at least I want to know who's responsible. You mentioned a moment ago that it is not necessarily the fault of the oil exporting countries. Is it the oil companies?
Well, I suppose one could argue that it's everybody's fault, and I don't mean to be Pollyannish about that. I think there are ways in which you could argue that the oil companies have been imprudent and that haven't developed domestic sources enough. But the truth is that the government gave them an incentive to rely on imported oil. So the government shares the responsibility, and government officials have acknowledged this. It's not simple to say there's one particular villain. Similarly, we have become ourselves as consumers so dependent on oil supplies that when the OPEC nations decided to restrict production and raise prices, we couldn't signal that change to ourselves fast enough. In other words, we couldn't adjust to that situation. So you might argue that we are also responsible for becoming over-dependent on oil. I don't really think it's profitable for us to spend too much time looking for a villain, trying to blame one group or all groups. The real problem for us is to say to ourselves, what do we have to do to get out from under this situation? And to come up with a set of answers that we can all accept, that we can develop a consensus around. That's been our problem, that we really have been at odds. There have been too many conflicts over what the alternatives are that we should adopt, what the priorities are. We need some sort of national consensus. It's bound to be a compromise, but that, it seems to me, is much more important than looking for a villain.
If that's the important question, what should we do to get out from under the crisis? Let's start to answer it.
Right.
Suppose I pose the question to you. What should we do to get out from under the crisis?
Right. I think, first of all, let me say that we have taken some important steps toward developing a national commitment on energy. Clearly, one thing we must do, and as soon as possible, is to decrease our consumption of imported oil. How do we do that? Well, we've discovered in the last year or two that if we simply allow prices to rise to world levels, it's going to have a dramatic effect on oil consumption. Secondly, we have discovered decontrol of oil and natural gas prices. By allowing the prices to go up, again, we provide an incentive for people to be to conserve more. Thirdly, we have to encourage an increase in energy efficiency. We have to encourage industry to substitute other factors for energy, to make better use of energy. Efficiency, it's estimated, is by far the best form of handling the oil shortage. In addition, obviously, we have to try to encourage the development of new sources. That means the discovery of new oil and natural gas, and incidentally, we have been discovering new natural gas. That's been one of the most dramatic developments within the last year. Many experts had been predicting that natural gas supplies would continue to decline. Now the feeling in the industry is much more optimistic. Another step we have to take, obviously, is to encourage conversion to coal. America is very rich in coal resources. We've been called the Persian Gulf of coal resources. That isn't easy, however, partly because our industries and our utilities are dependent now on other forms of energy, but also because we don't have the transportation. We don't have the railroad systems anymore to supply ourselves with the coal we need. In addition, obviously, we have to do what we can to develop alternate technologies, some of which we know are not going to come online for a long time. It's estimated, for example, that fusion energy will only become a viable possibility, if at all, after the turn of the next century. Here is a case where it seems to me what we're doing is developing a policy for the future, not the immediate future, but for the long-term future, on the assumption that right now we will have to depend on fossil fuels, but at some point we want to convert our reliance on fossil fuels to a reliance on what are, in effect, inexhaustible supplies of energy. There are other things we need to do. We need to develop a strategic oil reserve, which will keep us from being hostage to unstable countries, especially in the Middle East. And finally, I think what we need to do is to develop a kind of energy consciousness. We need to be aware, each of us individually and in our capacities as citizens, that this country really does have an energy problem. It's not a crisis in the sense that you can pin it down to any particular point in time, and it's not an easy problem to discuss because it has so many different ramifications. But it's serious, and we do need a national consensus about what we have to do about it.
Professor Lakoff, let me go back to something you touched on before. We talked about how we in the West, how we in America, have been shaped by the availability of energy and energy resources, almost by abundant energy. And you mentioned the automobile, the growth of the suburbs. I want to go further than that. How have we been shaped in our values and our beliefs by this availability of almost abundant energy in the past?
Well, I suppose one could begin to answer that by saying that America has always been looked upon as the land of unlimited possibilities and opportunities. And much of that vision of America has depended on our natural resources. It's not solely a matter of resources. It's also a matter of the pioneering spirit, the spirit of liberal individualism, which has always been so strong in this country. And the problem we seem to be facing now is not just that other countries are outdoing us economically, but that the basis for the kind of optimism that Americans have had about future prosperity seems to be eroding. And among other places, it's eroding in the fact that we have become dependent on external resources and unable to assure our continued economic prosperity as a result. So to that extent, it may be eroding a sense of confidence in the future. And let me add another important consideration. For a long time, I think it's fair to say that Americans took comfort in the fact that they could reasonably expect that their children, future generations, would be better off than they were. And if they were suffering certain shortages or making sacrifices, there was always a sense that things would get better in the future. If society gets to the point where you can't expect things to get better, you can't expect automatic cost of living increases. On the contrary, all you can anticipate is constriction. All you can anticipate is that, as somebody has said, we will become a zero-sum society. A society, in other words, in which sacrifices have to be made. There's no way to improve things by making deals. Well, then various sectors of the society will be in competition to shift burdens to each other, to beggar thy neighbor, in effect. And that could be a very different society than the one that we have come to know. I think if you have slack resources, in effect, if you have surpluses, then you can afford the kind of compromises and so on that we're used to. When things get tight, then any system which is highly pluralistic, which allows groups to veto each other's wishes, becomes very hard to manage. Inevitably, you're driven to a more rigid, more dictatorial kind of system if hard priorities have to be clamped down on everyone. Now, that doesn't mean that democracy is necessarily inefficient or that it can't manage its problems. It does mean, however, that an awful lot depends on the intelligence of the electorate. And the truth of the matter is that in recent years, we have experienced a great deal of social conflict caused directly and indirectly by the energy problem. Take, for example, the controversy over nuclear power. I myself think that that issue, the issue of nuclear power, is a serious test for a democratic society. It's a test because it hinges on whether we can make our representative institutions do the job that they're supposed to do for us, whether we can rely on recognized professionalism, whether we can turn over our decisions in these areas to referenda from time to time, to court actions, to all sorts of controversies. All of these things require that there be an efficient, effective government at work in our country.
Professor Lakoff, which are the values that are most likely to change in American life with the energy crisis upon us?
Well, let me put it this way. I think if we develop an even more serious energy problem than we have now, if things deteriorate, if things get worse and worse, if, for example, we have more gasoline shortages, if we have shortages of heating oil, if we have unemployment as a result of the energy crisis or really ravaging inflation, I would suppose that it would affect the civility of American life very seriously. Things have been bad enough throughout our history. We've always had a tendency toward frontier violence in this country, and we're seeing more and more of it, alas, in our cities. I'm afraid that we could see a great deal more if we had very serious energy shortages. That's one thing. I think we really have to worry about the fragile civility of this country. Secondly, I would say that people might have to develop a very different notion of what it means to fulfill themselves than they've had in the past. To a large extent, our notion of fulfillment has been one of increased material opportunities. And it may be that we are going to have to learn to take satisfactions in more qualitative kinds of things, and not to be concerned with acquiring the second car, the third boat, et cetera, et cetera. It may mean that we'll have to get used to living in less space, to discovering the joys of urban density that we try to escape when we move to the suburbs. I don't really think those are tragic or that they would deeply insult our values. I think what they would do is get us to modify or reinterpret our traditional values. But I could see much more serious problems if, for example, we need very serious government control. If that were to happen, it would undermine our democratic structure. It would undermine the pluralistic structure of our society. Let me give you a concrete illustration, if I may. Take the tradition of federalism. Federalism means that there is a certain give and take among the regions of the country as between the states and the federal government. Well, what are we discovering now that the energy crunch is on? We're discovering that states with energy resources are trying to tax states that don't have energy resources. They're increasing their severance taxes on coal and other minerals that are extracted. The same thing is happening in Canada, where Alberta is trying, in effect, to tax Ontario and the rest of Canada. And the result is you get terrific strains within the federal system. Now, I don't mean to blame Alberta or Oklahoma. I mean merely to point out that these strains exist, and they could get pretty serious. And the more serious they get, the more tensions they produce, the more difficult it is to have a coherent national policy, the more resentful people in one region will get of the other, and so on.
You've been listening to Soundings, putting ideas into circulation in conversations originating from the National Humanities Center. Your host was Wayne Pond. We're interested in your comments. Write to us at the National Humanities Center, Research Triangle Park, North Carolina, 27709. Director of the center is William Bennett. Soundings is distributed by the Public Affairs Broadcast Group, Los Angeles, California.
Soundings is made possible in part by a grant from the National Endowment for the Humanities.
This is Bill Bennett, Director of the National Humanities Center at Research Triangle Park, North Carolina. Please join us this week for the Center's radio program, Soundings. Dr. Sanford Lakoff, an authority on politics and energy, will discuss the energy crunch in the first of a series of programs from the Center on energy and the values of liberal democracy. I hope you'll be listening this week for Soundings.